From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson.
Here we are at Piocho Ranch, which is the intersection of a couple of our family's passions. Polo on the one hand and wine on the other.
This polo is Tom Barrick ponies. In a promotional video for his winery outside of Santa Barbara, California.
And oftentimes people say, well, what is the connection between polo and wine? And there are several, but the most important one is stewardship.
The winery is Barrick's side business. His real money comes from real estate. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about him this hour, in part because he's one of Donald Trump's oldest and closest friends. In all the ways that Trump is the quintessential New York billionaire, Barrick is all that for L.A. He pals around with Hollywood stars and champion surfers. Where Trump drinks Diet Coke, Barrick takes pride in his family's fine wine. Barrick's Bordeaux was served at Trump's inauguration. In fact, Barrick planned the whole inauguration. He raised more than $100 million for it. Here he is at the Lincoln Memorial the night before Trump took the oath of office.
Welcome, the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump.
In the video, you can see Trump putting his hand on Barrick's shoulder. They're really close.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. And thank you, Tom.
Reveal's Aaron Glantz has been looking into Barrick. He joins me now. So, Aaron, how did these two guys actually meet?
They met back in the 1980s. Tom Barrick was working for this Texas developer, and he helped Donald Trump buy the Plaza Hotel in New York. And remember back when Donald Trump being president seemed totally absurd to most people, and nobody in the Republican Party would give him the time of day, and nobody would endorse him? Tom Barrick endorsed him, and he started raising money for him, and he raised $22 million for one of Trump's super PACs. And now that Donald Trump is president, they have lunch together at the White House. Barrick told CNN they talk every day. And the New York Times says he's one of the few people that Donald Trump trusts.
So it sounds like they're pretty tight, but how did Barrick get rich in the first place?
Barrick is one of these investors who makes a lot of money profiting off of other people's pain. He made his first big pile of money off of the savings and loan crisis. He profited off the dot-com bust. And when the Great Recession happened, he was there to make one of his biggest plays yet.
Yeah, and this time, he's making money off of the housing bust. So we're going to spend the hour on housing, really on home ownership. Last year, it hit its lowest level in 50 years. While regular people have been struggling to keep their homes or save enough to buy one, Barrick has just been winning and winning.
Let me take you back to 2005. That year, Fortune magazine called Tom Barrick the world's greatest real estate investor. On the cover, he's smiling. An image of a gold house reflected in his aviator sunglasses. It was the height of the housing boom, but Tom Barrick told Fortune there was a bubble. He saw the crash coming, and he started cashing out on many of his real estate investments. His close friend Donald Trump said he'd welcome the crash.
Well, first of all, I sort of hope that happens, because then people like me would go in and buy.
That was recorded at a Trump University seminar in 2006.
If there is a bubble burst, as they call it, you can make a lot of money. You know, if you're in a good cash position, which I'm in a good cash position today, then people like me would go in and buy like crazy.
That's exactly what Barrick did. After the bubble burst, he founded a company that began buying thousands of foreclosed homes all over the country. Like this one on West 69th Street in South Los Angeles. It's a small Southern California bungalow with white aluminum siding behind a short metal gate. Marcus Butler grew up in this house.
Back in the back, my father had a little garden area where he grew, like, tomatoes, stuff like that. Tomatoes, greens, stuff like that. And he would pick it from back there and eat it.
Today, the yard is overgrown with crabgrass.
I mean, it's not been kept up too good, but basically still the same.
Marcus's parents bought the house in 1963. After they, like millions of other African Americans, left the Jim Crow South. And by the 1990s, the house was all paid off. But Marcus's father died, and his mom developed dementia, and she gambled. In 2007, she took out a giant $544,000 reverse mortgage. That's when the bank pays you for the equity in your house. A lot of retired people do it to supplement their income. But it's really a loan.
I mean, they put all this money in your face. You know, the only thing you see is the money, but you're not really listening to what they're explaining to you.
The loan Marcus's mother got came with an interest rate that topped out at 17%. And when she died in 2012, the family lost the home to foreclosure.
Me personally, I would have wanted to pass the house on. I mean, you know, it sounds like if I passed on, I would have passed it on to my son or my daughter. I mean, that's what, you know, we were taught when we were younger. Try to keep the house in the family.
The bank that foreclosed, it was run by Steve Mnuchin. You may recognize the name. He's now Donald Trump's Treasury Secretary. Documents from HUD show Mnuchin's bank was responsible for nearly 40% of all reverse mortgage foreclosures that came after the housing bust. After Mnuchin's bank took the house, it sat empty for almost a year before it sold at auction for $180,000. Tom Barrack's company was the buyer. The firm would end up owning more than 30,000 single-family homes across 10 states.
This is my investment philosophy.
Barrack laid out his vision in a speech to real estate investors at a University of Chicago conference during the depths of the Great Recession.
You man up or woman up, and you walk into a jungle where no one else wants to be, and you swing and you fight and you bite, and eventually, if you're successful, they're all swinging with you, and then you've got to move to another jungle.
Barrack became king of the jungle of American foreclosures, and his company became a big-time landlord by turning all those homes into rentals. Barrack even bragged about how cheap it was.
We retrofit many of these houses for $1,500 total.
Managing them was easy, he said, even with the homes spread out all over the country.
How can you manage them when they're everywhere? Well, how do you manage Wendy's? How do you manage McDonald's? How do you manage FedEx? How do you manage Kinko's?
Until the crash, this kind of company simply didn't exist. Of course, there have always been landlords on single-family homes, but they were mostly mom-and-pop landlords. And this kind of thing, where one company owned and rented out thousands of single-family homes in cities all over the country, from Los Angeles to Miami, it had never been done before. Four months after Barrack's company bought Marcus's family home at auction, a guy named Sean Pruitt signed a lease for the bungalow and moved in.
Hey there. Hey, Sean, how's it going?
I'll be right out, okay?
Okay.
Sean comes to the door, a wisp of a man with limbs barely thicker than sticks. It's the middle of the day. He's wearing a T-shirt and boxer shorts. Sean lives here with his partner and five dogs. He tells me he used to own his own house too, a small farm in Texas.
I had two donkeys, four hens, three goats, five dogs, and we were going to get into beekeeping, but that never happened.
Because Sean got sick. He has AIDS and lymphoma. He sold his farm and moved to L.A. to be closer to the UCLA Medical Center. That's how he ended up as a tenant with Barrack's company as his landlord.
And then they call this a bedroom, this tiny little hole of a room.
Looking around the house, it doesn't seem like Barrack's company has done any work.
And do you use this as
the
a
carpet's
bedroom?
Frayed. The no, kitchen linoleum is peeling. Outside, fronds from a neighboring palm tree are tangled in the electrical wire. Sean's lease makes fixing that his responsibility. And he says he can't afford it. Sean pays about $1,800 a month in rent. It's gone up every year since he moved in.
You'd think you'd be praised and rewarded for paying your rent on time and not having any problems and all that. But instead, they raise your rent and punish you, basically, for being a good tenant.
He'd like to move, but doesn't have the money. Meantime, his pantry is stocked with Campbell's soup and Jiffy peanut butter, donated from the local food bank. After four rounds of chemo, Sean's doctors have told him he probably only has a few months left.
I'm beyond helping at this point. I'm just kind of, they sent me on my way to basically die. So that's what I'm doing now, and we're sitting here and you're watching me die. I know that sounds so macabre, but it's true.
And Sean is expecting another rent increase when his lease runs out in August. He might not live that long.
Sean is just one of tens of thousands of people across the country renting homes from the company Barrick founded. And while Barrick says it's no big deal to manage properties across state lines, not everyone agrees.
They are kind of the ultimate absentee, far removed, out-of-state landlord.
When we come back, we head to Georgia, where the company owns 6,000 homes and is raising billions of dollars off of them on Wall Street. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.